We're in Mark chapter 4. If you will turn there, Mark chapter 4, we are finishing a series today called The Story of the Soul, and it is based on Mark chapter 4, the parable of the sower and the seed and the soils. And I told you in week one that most New Testament scholars believe that the Gospel of Mark is the earliest written gospel, the very first gospel that was written. And so it's the earliest gospel, and this is the earliest parable in the earliest gospel. And it is the most explained parable by Jesus in all of the gospels. And so we have the earliest gospel, earliest parable in the gospel, and then the most explained gospel by Jesus. So that lets us know that this is an important story. As a matter of fact, multiple times in this section of Scripture, Jesus has invoked us to listen, to pay attention, to hear. Those are very relevant words with what's going on in the world around us, to listen and to pay attention and to hear. And so Jesus, 13 times throughout this section, uses some type of the idea of listening or paying attention or hearing. And what that implies is that it is possible, Jesus instructs, to have ears but not be able to hear. It is possible to have eyes but not be able to see. And so the story serves as a warning for us to pay attention specifically to the condition of our souls. The soul, we have said, is the life center of who we are. It is the very core, the essence of who we are. And we have said week after week that we are the keepers of our soul, that you are the keeper of your soul. And Jesus even cautions in the Gospels that we can lose our soul while attempting to gain the world. And we said when we talked about that text that the idea there is not has less to do with your destination. Sometimes we make that about heaven or hell. What it really has to do with losing the core of who we've been created to be, losing the essence of who we are, that we could literally spend our lives seeking to gain the world and lose the very depth of who we are. So I want to read this text one more time in its entirety, and then we'll come back and drill down and zero in on some specifics for the conclusion of our series today. So Mark chapter 4, again, we're teach the Bible here at City Church. I hope you brought your Bible. If not, then there's app, there's the YouVersion app that you can look at, the City Church app. We'll put the verses up as well for those who are online and both here in the room. Mark chapter 4, again, he began to teach beside the sea, and a very large crowd gathered about him so that he got into a boat and sat in it on the sea, and the whole crowd was beside the sea on the land. And he was teaching them many things in parables, and in his teaching he said to them, listen. So there it is, our first admonition to pay attention, to listen. Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow. And as he sowed, some seed fell along the path, and the birds came and devoured it. Other seed fell on rocky ground where it did not have much soil, and immediately it sprang up since it had no depth of soil. And when the sun rose, it was scorched, and since it had no root, it withered away. Other seed fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no grain. And other seeds fell into good soil and produced grain, growing up and increasing and yielding 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold. And he said, he who has ears, let him hear. So three times now these bookends at the beginning of the story and the end, this idea of listening, of hearing. And when he was alone, those around him with the 12 ask him about the parables. I like the fact that the disciples decided, hey, Jesus, can you fill us in on what's going on here? It makes me feel good that they had to go ask about the parable too. What are you talking about? Can you fill in the gaps for us here? And he said to them, verse 11, to you has been given the secret of the kingdom of God, but for those outside, everything is in parables, so that, and he quotes the book of Isaiah here, they may indeed see but not perceive. They may indeed hear but not understand, lest they should turn and be forgiven. So we said when we talked about this text in the very first week that it is possible to have eyes but not see and ears to not hear, and that our unbelief naturally leads us where we cannot see and cannot hear outside of God's work in our hearts and lives. Verse 12, And he said to them, "Do you not understand this parable? How then will you understand all the parables?" And then he breaks it down for us. Verse 14, "The sower sows the word, and these are the ones along the path where the word is sown. When they hear, Satan immediately comes and takes away the word that is sown in them." Verse 16, "And these are the ones sown on rocky ground, the ones who, when they hear the word, immediately receive it with joy, and they have no root in themselves, but endure for a while. Then when tribulation or persecution arises on account of the word, immediately they fall away." Verse 18, where we'll drill down today, "And others are the ones sown among thorns. They are those who hear the word, but the cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfaithful. But those that were sown on the good soil are the ones who hear the word and accept it and bear fruit 30-fold and 60-fold and 100-fold." So we have said every week that there are some things that are constant that do not change in this story. The sower never changes. The sower just sows the seed in abundance. The seed never changes. With seed, when it is planted, it will spring to life. It will germinate. It will produce fruit. It will bear fruit. And so the sower never changes. He always sows the seed abundantly, so even recklessly at times, it seems. The seed never changes. It will always be planted when it's given the opportunity and spring to life in the good soil. The thing that constantly changes throughout the story are the soils. Now, the soils constantly change, and I have said every week that if you replace the word soil with the word soul, then we begin to understand what this parable is about. That there are three soils in this story that prevent the seed from taking root and sprouting to life. The very first soil was the pathway. Now, we call this hardened souls, that our souls can become hardened where the seed cannot take root. And we mentioned just a few things that week that can create hardness of the soul. We talked about self-righteousness, that I do not believe I really need it, right? That I'm better than this person, not as bad as this person. We talked about hurt, how hurt is something that can really harden the soul and allow bitterness and kind of a cynical attitude to set in, and that hurt people often hurt people, and wounded people wound people. And so hurt or things that happen in our lives can cause our souls to grow hard, and we create this kind of natural protective shell to protect ourselves. We talked about apathy, that the story of the seed on the pathway is really just people that are coming and going is what makes the soil hardened on the pathway. It's just the everyday coming and going of life. And as we live life, we can develop this apathetic attitude that's just focused on the coming and going of life, and our souls grow hard in the process. And then last week, we focused in on the shallow soul, that there are some that fell on the rocky soil, that underneath this thin layer of soil was limestone or rocks, and so the seed really never had a chance to germinate and spring to life because underneath was the rocks, was the limestone. And we said that the shallow soul tends to focus on the superficial things in life, that we get distracted by the things that are the temporary and fleeting things and lose sight of the things that are eternal. And so we talked last week about what does it mean to deepen our faith, to go deep in our souls, to be drawn toward the Creator, both what deep, we throw that word around a lot, what deep means and what it does not mean. So if you did not listen last week, I encourage you to go back. Again, I've said this is like one long sermon over 4 weeks. So if you missed a part of the sermon, go back and listen to it. And then today we're going to talk briefly about the cluttered soul, the cluttered soul. Let's look again in verse 18 just to remind ourselves again what Jesus said when he explained here the cluttered soul. "And others are the ones sown among thorns. They are those that hear the word." And then notice the trifecta here. "The cares of the world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desire for other things enter in and choke the word, and it proves unfaithful." So the cluttered soul, that some seed fell among thorns. It fell among the weeds which choked the life from the plants. This is the power of the thorn, the power of the weed. I really shouldn't use that expression, though, because some of you take that the wrong way. And some of you know the power of the weed when you're in high school and your 20s and all that. So we're not talking about that kind of weed. We're talking about thorns and thistles, and those weeds, those blasted weeds that spring up, right, in our flower beds and the places that we have mulch and the places that we have rock, those weeds that we cannot get rid of, no matter how much of that weed stuff we put down, the weeds find a way to spring to life. So that's what we're talking about, a seed that is literally choked out, the thorny weeds. There's no way to win in the thorny weeds battle around your house, right? Yesterday, I spent time getting rid of some weeds that were in our front flower bed. And what is it? What is that weed that has a thorn like every, I don't know, every millicentimeter, is that even a word? Every millimeter, there's a thorn. And the only way you can get it out is to transport it by its leaves or something. And so you're guaranteed a prick. And so that's what we're talking about. Now, I know we're here in the South, and there's two philosophies of getting rid of weeds. There is to pull the weed, get it up by its root, or there is the round up the weed approach. How many of you are more the round up the weed type person? That's me. Most men are that way. Just kill it, right? Just get rid of it that way. But my wife, I can't speak for all of you, but my wife would rather pull the weed and to get it up because she thinks that I do not have the ability to round up just the weed, that everything else around it somehow also gets killed. And she speaks from experience because that does happen. But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with other stuff dying too, as long as the weeds die. And then there's like a different level of Southern person that you're like, I have a special poison that's beyond Roundup, like it's a secret sauce that they use to kill kudzu on the side of the roads, and it comes in a secret container, and there's no words on it, just like poison, right? So some of you have this. How many of you have this? You have some type of poison. Here we go. I know. You have the secret formula of poison that kills everything, including your lungs when you are distributing it as you breathe that stuff in. I know, kudzu, the state flower of Alabama. Like, you need something to kill that stuff. You know, my precious wife, who had never stepped foot in the state of Alabama until we moved here, is from the Pacific Northwest, had no clue what kudzu was before she moved here, and she kept talking about this beautiful greenery that was covering the sides of the road and all these things, and she was referring to kudzu. I'm saying, I don't think many people would consider kudzu a beautiful weed in the South because it literally can take over everything, including your own house. And so the idea of weeds will choke things out. And so Jesus mentions three life-choking thorns in the story. And what Jesus is saying is pay attention. Pay attention. Pay attention because we are prone to allow things to crowd out the seed in our hearts and lives. We are prone to allow things to choke out the life of the seed. Now notice the thorns choke out life. There's a difference in getting choked out and getting knocked out. Knockout is usually an instantaneous blow. Choke out is something that normally takes time. It's a progression. When I was in college, I worked in a warehouse where we would pull medical supplies and put them in transfer trailers, and they'd go to hospitals and things like that. There was a group of me and my friends that worked in this medical warehouse. We rode around on what's called an order picker that would go up high and low, and you'd get things together. But in the kind of downtime, our break time and our lunch time, we found creative ways to spend our time. I mean, I was 18, 19 years old, so of course I did. And one of the things we do is wrestle or whatever and fight with each other. Supposedly, we were supposed to be wrestling out of fun, but you know how that goes sometimes. And so my supervisor decided he wanted to wrestle me. I was just kind of a bigger guy and a little scrappy back then. And so back then I said, and then, and so we decided to wrestle. And he wrestled like in high school. I didn't know anything about technical wrestling. I'm not like Danny Tim, like Mr. Wrestling and wrestling coach. I just know, like, grab him by the head and hold on until they tap. And so that's what happened. He kind of came at me. I weighed a lot more than he did. I didn't weigh a lot, but I was bigger than him. And so I grabbed him around the neck and just held, with evidently not in a healthy position, until I choked him out. Well, the dude never tapped. It's not my fault he didn't tap. And so blacks out, and we get called in to the boss and all these things, how we can't be wrestling during break time. I think that guy's still bitter at me today because he was supposed to be a trained wrestler and he got choked out by just whatever redneck scrappy boy. And so, but you know what it means to choke out something, right? Just you get choked out and you slowly lose life over time. And so this is what happens in this story, these thorns that choke out. So part of the danger here is that we can be rendered spiritually unconscious without even fully recognizing it and knowing it. So Jesus mentions three thorns in particular here, three weeds. One, the cares of this world, the cares of this world. Peter says in chapter 2, 1 Peter chapter 2, that we are aliens and strangers, that we are exiles in this world, that we are to be attentive toward the cares of a world, just not this one, just not this present earthly world, that our eyes are to be centered on a world that is to come and not the distractions of this age. And it is very easy to be obsessed with the here and now and to lose sight of the eternal. Paul refers in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4 as a soldier that becomes entangled in civilian pursuits. I love that analogy. Paul says there's a danger for the soldier of Jesus Christ to become entangled, same idea, to be choked out in civilian pursuits, in focusing on things that are of this world, the cares of this world that tend to tangle and choke the life out of us. There's an implication here that ties this word to the word worry, that we become so consumed with the cares of this world, worrying about the things in this world that we can't even control, that we lose sight of the eternal, that we tend to become consumed with the created over the creator, and we end up with what John Piper deems a wasted life, which he says is a life consumed with the temporary. As followers of Jesus, we live in this already but not yet tension of God's kingdom. That the rule and reign of Jesus is already in our hearts and lives, in the hearts and lives of his followers, but we still live in what Paul calls temporary tents. We still live in a temporary, broken, earthly kingdom. We are still destined for a physical death. We live as people who, again, the rule and reign of Christ is already in our hearts. We are already a part of a spiritual kingdom, and yet we are not yet in the spiritual kingdom, that we still live in the earthly, broken kingdom of earth. And so how do we balance this tension of being an already but not yet follower of Jesus? Well, Paul says in Colossians 3:2 that the way that we do this is to set our mind on things above and not on the things of the earth. To set our mind on the things above and not on things that are on the earth. Here's how I break that down. Minds above, bodies below. Minds above, bodies below. What does that mean? It means I live life with an eternal perspective. I still live life in the trenches. Like, we're not removed from the broken world that we live in. Our bodies are still below. And as people who are spiritually minded and spiritually kingdom minded, that means that we should be active in the earthly kingdom in which we live. Our minds are above. We have a spiritual, eternal perspective, but we still live bodily in this world. And so we should be actively engaged in the earthly kingdom with the gospel of Jesus. I mean, how relevant is that for the world that we're living in right now? That we should be on the front lines of having conversations and seeking to understand people and seeking to proclaim the gospel and how we live and the words that we choose, that we should be the ones that are seeking to tear down walls of prejudice and racism and abuse and all the things we see going on, that we should be people that are speaking words of hope and life. Minds above, bodies below. Set your mind on things above, not on the things of this earth. Not focused on what is fleeting. A.W. Tozier says that for many of us, the problem is that we feel too much at home in the earthly world. we feel too much at home in the earthly kingdom, and it is choking the life from us. We are sojourners. Our citizenship is in heaven. We do not belong to this world. We are just passing through. And so we keep our eyes fixated on our King. And that creates in us kind of this holy homesickness in our soul, that we have a desire for His kingdom when all things will be made new. That we have a holy homesickness in our souls for an era, for a time, for a kingdom where there is no more, right? That's how it's described in the last part of the New Testament, where there's no more. And we can just fill in the blank right now, that there is no more racism, that there is no more violence, that there is no more destruction, that there is no more sin, that there is no more prejudice, that there is no more pain, that there is no more sickness, that there is no more COVID, that there is no more cancer, that there is the no mores that weigh us down in the earthly kingdom. We should have a holy homesickness in our hearts for that time while seeking to engage the brokenness of the world around us. Not being choked out by the cares of this world. Hebrews 11 reminds us we are strangers and exiles of whom, listen, of whom this world is not worthy. We are sojourners and exiles. We anticipate a homecoming in a better country, one that God has prepared for us. So set your eyes on Jesus and keep the cares of this world in their rightful place. Focused on Jesus, actively engaged below while our minds are set above. I'm afraid for many of us, it's minds below, bodies below. And the call to follow Jesus is the call to minds above, bodies below. Let's talk about the second one. The deceitfulness of riches, Jesus says, is this weed, this thorn, that can literally choke out the sea, choke the life from us. This is the idea of the pursuit of stuff, of just obtaining more, obtaining bigger, obtaining better. And notice the phrase here, the deceitfulness of riches. This is the idea of a belief or a behavior, a trust in something other than Jesus. It can be stuff, it can be money, it can be wealth. It's a belief that something outside of Jesus, when it comes to stuff or money or accumulation, that something outside of Jesus can satisfy me, can bring me fulfillment, can bring me meaning, can bring me happiness. And Jesus says in this story, it's all an illusion. The deceitfulness of riches, it is an illusion. The pursuit of financial security will leave you wanting. It will leave you unsatisfied. It will leave you searching. It will deceive your soul. And I say it will deceive your soul both in times of abundance and in times of want. It doesn't matter where you're at on that scale. It will deceive your soul into thinking that in times of want, that if I somehow have more, I'll be satisfied. That in times of abundance, thinking somehow that I have enough, that I will be satisfied. The deceitfulness of riches. Riches make promises they cannot keep. They're deceivers. Man, our clickbait culture tells us that riches are the answer to the problem, doesn't it? Have this, buy this, purchase this, go here. We are duped into believing that riches are somehow a barometer of God's blessings or His ability to provide for us. Riches make us believe our value and identity are found in what we are able to obtain or accumulate. Riches promise a comfort, a rest, an abundance that is only found in Jesus and Jesus alone. Riches are deceptive. They are deceptive. And so we have to be proactive in the cultivation of our soul in this area. We have to be keepers of our soul. So let me give you just some very practical soil testing questions when it comes to riches, regarding riches. Here's some things that we should be constantly asking ourselves because of the deceptiveness of riches. Do I think I would be happier if I just had more? Do I think I would be happier, more fulfilled, more satisfied if I just had more? If I believe that, I've been duped into the deceitfulness of riches. Here's another question. Do I believe I am more deserving than those who have less than me and those who have more than me? Do I somehow believe that I'm deserved because I have more and the person that lives in this part of the area of town doesn't have as much? Do I somehow think I am more deserving of it, of what I have? Do I think I'm somehow more deserving of riches than the person that has a lot and seems to be wasting it in all the frivolous ways? Do I somehow think I'm more deserving? That's a hard question, a soil question. Do I believe I'm more deserving than those that have more or less than me? Here's one. Am I managing well what God has given me? Am I managing well what God has given me? Am I being a steward, it's the New Testament word, of what God has given me? And then here is my go-to question when it comes to cultivating my soul against the deceitfulness of riches. Am I growing in my generosity? Am I growing in my generosity? You see, generosity helps me hold loosely to the temporary. When I recognize what God has given me is for me to manage and steward, it helps me, right? It helps me hold loosely to the things that God has given me because it's not for me. It's not for my purposes. It's not for me to acquire more and obtain more. God has appointed me a manager over what he has given me. And so growing in my generosity helps cultivate my soul toward recognizing the deceitfulness of riches. Did you know that generosity is the antidote to greed? You want to be a person that is not a greedy person? Become a generous person. Generosity helps us overcome greed in our lives. I mean, is there a word that describes the economic situation in America more than greed? Right? The way that we fight against that, or we're cautioned against that, is to be a generous person. The deceitfulness of riches. And so of all the things that Jesus could include in his story that will choke the life out of your soul, he chooses to include the deceitfulness of riches. And so that causes us to sit up and pay attention. What role does riches play in my life? Am I being deceived by it? Cultivate your soul. Riches are deceptive. Obtaining is not the goal of life. Riches are not where your security is found. Jesus says you can't serve two masters. You know why? One of those masters is the source of life, and one of those masters will choke the life out of you. Weed it out. What about this third thing that Jesus mentions? The desire for other things. Pivotal word here, desire. John Ortberg says, desire is the Velcro of the soul. I love that. Desire is the Velcro of the soul, that the busy soul gets attached to the wrong things because the soul is sticky. It will attach itself to stuff. And I believe the inclusion of this phrase, other things, refers to anything that we prioritize over God in our lives. We call it, the Old Testament word here, idolatry. Paul picks it up in the New Testament. Paul says, if you think idolatry has to do with bending your knee to a golden calf, you've missed the idea. The idea of idolatry is that I am pursuing anything in my life, any person, anything over God. In that moment, that thing, that person, whatever it is, that becomes my idol. Jesus says the desire for other things. You allow your soul to be Velcroed. We've said from week one that our soul connects us to our Creator. It is the breath of God in us. We have referred to Deuteronomy 6, the Shema of the Old Testament people of God, that they would repeat this repeatedly and teach it to their kids. Here, there's our word, here the Lord is one. We are to love God with all of our hearts and with all of our souls, with everything that we are, that we are to Velcro our souls to God. And when we Velcro our souls to anything other than God, we are disconnecting from the source of life. Jesus says in Matthew 6, seek Him and His righteousness, and all of these other things, they'll be added to you. But seek Him. Seek His kingdom and His righteousness. What prevents the seed from taking root among the thorns is a cluttered soul. What are we focused on? Are we focused on the minutiae of life? Have we been duped? Have we been hoodwinked into this kind of pursuit of more? Have we been strangled by the fleeting pursuit of things other than God? You see, I'm afraid that we mistake clutter for living, accumulating, getting. We mistake clutter, busyness. We mistake clutter for living life. And we are so preoccupied by the external and the superficial that we choke to death the soul without even realizing it. Hardened souls, shallow souls, cluttered souls. And guess what? The sower continues to sow the seed. In abundance, he sows the seed. Amid the hardened souls, amid the shallow souls, amid the cluttered souls, the sower sows the seed. Don't forget, there's a fourth type of soil, a fourth type of soul in this parable. It's the good soil, right? Verse 20. We go back to the good soil. But those that were sown on the good soil are the ones that hear the word, they accept it, they bear fruit 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold. The sower is sowing the seed, and there is a good soul, a good soil. That means that the seed is planted at the deepest level. They have spiritual eyes to see. They have spiritual ears to hear. They recognize they need Jesus. They lean into Jesus. This seed springs to life. It embraces the gospel. It clings to the gospel. And the gospel changes the soul. It changes my external because it has changed my internal. This seed is planted deeply. It springs to life. This seed in the good soil, it perseveres. It does not die. It is not choked out. This good soil, this good soul, where the seed is planted, it bears fruit. Abundant life is evidenced. It lives life in Christ. God is plowing. God is cultivating. God is sowing. God is working in the hardened, shallow, and cluttered soil. And the good news of the gospel is the seed. The good news of the gospel will spring to life when it is planted in the good soil. Will we have eyes to see? Will we have ears to hear? How's your soul? Let's invite God into the deepest part of who we are. Let's invite God to do His work where it matters the most in our souls. Let's invite God and ask Him to keep our souls, one, sensitive, to keep our souls not hardened, but to keep our souls sensitive, to keep our souls sensitive to His voice. Not hardened by our own self-righteousness or hurt or the coming and goings of life that cause our souls to grow apathetic to spiritual things. Let's invite God and beg God to keep our souls sensitive. Let's keep our souls fixated on Jesus. We said it last week, to be rooted in Jesus, to be built up by Jesus, to be established in Jesus and not distracted by the superficial and the shallow and the temporary and the fleeting. Let's invite God to keep our souls fixated on Jesus. And then let's invite God to keep our souls centered, to keep them centered on the eternal and not choked out by the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches and the idolatry of other things. Let's ask the great sower to cultivate our souls, to open our spiritual eyes so that we might see, to open our spiritual ears so that we might hear, and to implant and grow the eternal seed deep in our souls so that we might experience eternal, abundant, fruitful life in Him. Take care of what is most important in you. You are the keeper of your soul. You see, gaining the whole world, but losing your soul in the process. Let's invite God to sow His seed, to cultivate our souls so that we might be planted deeply in Him and that we might experience and know what it means to live life in abundance. Not choked out, not blown over by the hardships of this world, not consumed with the temporary and neglecting the eternal. God, would You give us spiritual eyes to see? Would You give us spiritual ears to hear and cultivate our souls in the process?